Hello and welcome to the first episode of Our Food. I'm Mary Brophy and through this series I'll be exploring County Donegal to find the foods that make us who we are and discover the stories behind that food. From Rutland Island to the Inishowen Peninsula, I'll be meeting producers, farmers and fishermen who are passionate about bringing good food from their fields to our plates. Coming up on today's programme, I meet two nuns who've transformed a 2-acre field into a growing nirvana.
And also it saves a lot of money. Like, I haven't bought potatoes for 4 or 5 years and I'm just ready to start the new potatoes. So I had about 3 weeks where I'm buying potatoes. I am shocked at the price of potatoes.
We discover the importance of country markets to their loyal customers in Remelton.
The rope goes down and everybody makes a dash.
Don't be on our way.
And I get a masterclass in brewing beer.
Obviously, we want particular flavour profiles. We want, you know, there's different things that we're actually trying to achieve. But in essence, we're creating sugar.
But first, a couple of weeks ago, I travelled to a very beautiful spot on the outskirts of Bundoran. Located on the exposed and windswept Atlantic coastline, this mightn't be the first place you'd choose to grow food. But it was here, back in 2006, that Sisters of Mercy nuns Assumpta Butler and Mary Kate Hagen decided to turn a 2-acre plot into a garden and allotments for the local community. Concerned about the environment and the rising costs of food production as oil prices increase, they wanted to promote organic, locally grown food as a more sustainable method. And with the help of trainers Ingrid Foley and Klaus Leitenberger, they established Glorinamara Community Garden.
The onions are there. I'm just trying to think. See the cabbages, I'd imagine they would be lifting those, probably weeding cabbages. Just come over to see what's happened. There's beans. The two of us began here 7 years ago. We have a 2-acre site and we have set up in that 7 years. There's two aspects to the project. There are community garden and there are allotments.
Yeah, well, I had come back from Nigeria. I'd been working in Nigeria and it worked with, you know, poor communities there and community development. I felt there was something else needed, that, you know, that kind of justice work can burn you out really. There must be another way. And I thought maybe a wider kind of a context. We thought we would try something kind of different. And it would be around the earth and reconnecting with the natural world.
It would have been developed as a big flats or a development site if we hadn't held on to it. I think it's the last green site on the edge of the town. So I think it's really important to the people now that it has gone back into the community as opposed to gone into flats because it's a prime site. It's absolutely stunning. It's sitting on, as you can see, it's sitting on the Atlantic.
Yeah, so you can just see how, from a real estate point of view, this has...
This is high value. We're standing on gold here.
Yeah.
So it's just nice that we have been able to keep it for the people of Bundoran, but I think they really appreciate that.
Is it brown gold as well? I mean, is this rich ground for growing?
Well, no, it is not. Everybody told us we'd never grow anything and there'd be loads of salt on everything and it would all blow in from the sea and really we were wasting our time. But
these are flowers, flowering plants, and these are all varieties that would be rich in nectar, so they're good for the pollinating insects.
Okay.
So it helps the biodiversity.
And you're planting...
It also helps us because we have beans and things that need pollinators. Well, I had seen the community garden. So this year I decided I would try to get on it and really learning a lot, even though I've been gardening for a while, you know, myself. But I'm learning the right way to do things.
The process is that Ingrid, who is a trained gardener, obviously, who worked in the organic centre, comes to us for 3 hours every week, and an hour of that is spent preparing the ground, and then she works hands-on with people for 2 hours between 2 and 4. So, but it would scare me that in 30 years how many of those skills have been lost as well. So the training is a big part of the course here. So as well as having food available locally, we also feel that the training is important. We have to start locally. We need to start growing locally and eating locally. Ingrid and Mary, yes, you've met me before.
Yeah. At the moment we're planting leeks. So the method I'm using here to grow them on and move them from the tray is to carefully take them out of the seed box that they're in, just by, if you look at me here, just gently teasing them out, just with my finger, So I'm just pulling it out very gently.
You just want to get underneath the root.
Like
and actually,
that.
They look like chives right now.
They're actually, well, they're the same family. So it's all, the onion, leeks are a member of the onion family. So there's two methods that you can use to plant them. And the one I'm using here is to make a big hole with, you know, at the, I'm using the top of the hoe there. If you want a long white shaft on the leek, the deeper you plant it.
Really?
Into the planting
hole. Okay, so you've quite a large hole here.
Yeah, no, I might put it, it's a little bit too large because that's quite a small one. So I'll just pop that in there. I'll pop the next one in there. So they're about maybe 5 inches apart. So the further away or the closer you plant them, the skinnier they're going to be. And the how deep you plant them will be a function of how long you want the shaft, the white shaft on the leek to be.
And in terms of the schools then, I mean, do the schools come in for tours? Do they get to see it?
Yeah, I work a system out from early May now to the end of June, and I bring each class down twice. And the idea is, like, they all thought that beans grew in tins, and they were sure peas did. Whatever about beans, but peas definitely grew in tins. So the idea is to show them the beans at an early stage and later on. Same with the peas, lettuce. So I'm trying to show them the plants at the different stages. But it's very important because a lot of them were sure that lettuce was carrots. So we had to send a sort that one out. I suppose I'm very happy with the response. We didn't advertise until this year. This was the first year we advertised, and I think that says a lot. I still have never advertised the allotments, so it's all word of mouth.
Pulling weeds and picking stones, man is made of dreams and bones.
I suppose there's many an evening I come along here and think, what am I doing? And the next thing, somebody will walk into the garden and say, oh, I just love this garden. And, you know, so you always get that positive feedback. So you just really have to believe you're on the right road because you get so much positive feedback. I must say the businesses in the town, everybody in the town has been nothing but supportive.
Now, brewing used to be a thriving industry in Ireland. In the early 1900s, most big towns had their own brewery and brands of beer, like Cornwall's in Bandon, Harley & Company in Ennis, or the famous Perry's Ale in Laois. These all died out as the industry consolidated around the big brands like Guinness and Smithwick's. But in the last few years, craft beer is on the rise again, and new microbreweries have mushroomed across the country. Last year, 13 new breweries set up, and sales of craft beer were up about 35% to over 10 million. That's still just a tiny percentage of all the beer sold in Ireland, so there's plenty of room for expansion. I travelled to the Fanad Peninsula, outside the lovely village of Rathmullen, where I met one couple hoping to take advantage, Libby Carton and Rick Lever. Here at Kinnegar Brewery, Rick had just begun one of their farmhouse brews in the new 10 hectolitre brewhouse.
So this is where it all begins.
Yeah, this is the malt loft. So this is where we store all the malted barley, the malted rye, the malted wheat, the different malts that we use. And we have certain ideas about the types of beers that we like and we want to make, but also the types of beers that we think our target audiences are actually interested in, what they would like to drink. So over the years, you know, just basically kind of learning how to brew, learning, you know, what you can create with which malts, what you can create with which hops, the flavors of each, you know, how you can kind of combine those, how you can balance them, develop and design recipes. One of the things about a lot of brewers is that they're quite generous. If you go out there, you know, a lot of the really kind of big name brewers would be, you know, they're actually publishing their recipes. They're saying this is the recipe. But there's a big leap between the recipe and being able to produce the beer.
That's the craft,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So talk me through the craft. What happens here?
And first thing in the morning, we come in and we start crushing that. So basically what we're trying to do is, a brewer just produces sugar. Obviously we want particular flavor profiles. We want, you know, there's different things that we're actually trying to achieve. But in essence, we're creating sugar. The yeast eat the sugar and they produce alcohol and CO2. Okay. So the maltster actually is the person who begins the process of brewing. He starts the process of making the sugars. They soak the raw grain and they let it germinate. And then they stop the germination. We continue the process of making the sugars. It's very important that we actually mill this to a very specific degree of fineness or coarseness.
Rick, why did you and Libby decide to do this?
We certainly both liked beer. and I think when we lived in Germany for the 7 or 8 years, we really did develop a pleasure in good beer and missed it when we came back here. Apart from Guinness, really, there was not that much that we enjoyed drinking here.
Mm.
But we did at an early stage also sort of say, is this something that we can run as a business? And that's a very different, that's a very different thing. I was talking to somebody about this just the other day. You know, there's the great comment by Anthony Bourdain in his book Kitchen Confidential, where he says, Jesus, you know, the worst thing is when, you know, talented amateur cooks actually go into the restaurant business. It's a recipe for failure because they go, you know, they don't think about running it like a business. And then, you know, after a short period of time, the whole thing has gone belly up and they no longer enjoy cooking anymore either. So they've gone and ruined a hobby for themselves. We still don't know whether we can run it as a business. You know, only time will tell.
The best way to quantify it is that it's our future. That's really what it means to us. And we're, as Rick has mentioned, we're not sure that it can work as a business. We think it can. According to our figures, it can. But reality is always very different to a business plan. We hope it can work. But when we were making the decision, we definitely took the approach that we wanted to do something new. That's part of what led to thinking of the brewery and deciding to give it a go as a business, is we wanted to do something new. You reach a certain stage in your career and you just need a little bit of impetus and a new focus. And this is something that we've worked together, myself and Rick, for a long time, and this is something that we can do together, although it's very much Rick's area of expertise, but we can do it together, and it gives us a new departure, I suppose, in the rural environment that we want to live in. It's just very fortunate that we've come up with something we can do again in Donegal, where I certainly want to be, and Rick very obligingly stays here with me.
That's it.
So that, like, it came out like a fine dust.
What we really want is just well-broken grains.
Mm. Okay. So you can see, I can see it here in the book, the husk is just cracked open and you can see the inside of the barley.
Exactly.
When you see it at this level, it really is a very natural process then, you know, you're trying to do. You're not adding an awful lot.
No, it's one step away from agriculture. You know, it is an agricultural, I mean, that's what we kind of like about where we are. This is an agricultural kind of enterprise.
You can feel the heat as you come down the stairs now. You obviously have, there's a brew on here today.
Yeah, we're brewing at the moment. We're actually well beyond the mashing point. We're boiling now, so that's why the intense heat that you find in here. This is the mash tun. But it's a two-vessel brew house. The mash tun also doubles as a boil kettle. And then the one next to it is what's called a louder tun. It also does double duty as a whirlpool. You know, we dump the grist in.
Mix.
It's a mix, yeah. Big soupy porridge. Once we know we have the extract, we have the sugars that we want, we pump everything out of here, liquid, grains, everything, into the louder tun. The grains create a filter bed of their own. The liquid flows through it, and it comes out relatively clear on the other side.
How long does it take to brew a batch?
Well, the brewing technically is what we're doing right now. So we get that, a brew day, we get through in one day. The fermentation, you're looking at probably 4 to 5 days in what we call primary fermentation. And it goes and it sits, you know, anywhere from, you know, 10 days to 3 weeks in a conditioning cellar.
Rick was making the point that this is one step removed from agriculture.
It is.
Is this the future of kind of food production and how we think about things in rural Ireland, in a very rural county like Donegal?
In Donegal, I think it has to be, because the landscape, the place is not suitable for the most part for industrial agriculture. And it would be a pity to see it become purely a leisure tourism county because agriculture was no longer feasible. So this kind of enterprise is exactly the kind of business that I think can really sustain a varied, diverse rural community.
Mm.
It's important from that point of view. The nice thing about making beer is that we love it. That's you have a real affection for the product and an appreciation of good beers that other people are making. It's just nice to be able to really appreciate the qualities of what you're making and what you're trying to make. There's a very direct relationship between the work we're doing and the product that comes out at the end of it. And there's an emotional response as well as a commercial response, which is very important to us.
I think what you said at the beginning, I think curiosity on behalf of the producers as well as on behalf of the consumers will attract people to a product. But if it's a quality product, they'll come back.
They will come back. And I think there's always the danger that you can put something new in the marketplace and people will react. There'll be an initial good response and it's a curiosity factor. But if they're going to come back and drink it again, it has to be because it's a genuinely good product. And luckily we're finding that we do have a lot of repeat users of our beer, which is the really important thing.
Farmers markets and weekly food markets are all enjoying increasing popularity nowadays as a way to connect producer to consumer and encourage more people into food production. But as many of you know, the forerunner to all of these were the country markets. They began as a means to give rural women financial independence, selling home-baked and home-grown farm produce cooperatively. I went along to Remelton Country Markets, where the producers were setting up their stalls, and first spoke to Mary Rose, one of the members.
The only stuff that's sold open is the bakery and breads. Most of the other stuff is packed, and you have an identification number and the price, and it's just left, and the customers just come in and buy, put it in the basket. Here it's a personal service, but everywhere else on the tables it's just in the basket.
So this is all yours?
Yes, this is mine, yeah.
So what's involved in getting set up then?
Oh, lots of hard work. Lots of hard work and passion. That's the two key ingredients for doing something like this. It's a lot of hard work, but you have to enjoy what you're doing, and I just enjoy food. Most of it is put together the night before. You know, like all these were all baked off last night. So the customer's getting as fresh as, you know, which they don't get in supermarkets, you know, so that's why it's so popular. More people are becoming aware of it now, which is good.
I'm just looking around, Mary Rose. All of the produce is beautifully arranged. You really take time and effort with it, don't you?
Well, the reason is it looks so good is because of the passion and the hard work. There's no point in working all week and just putting something on a table in the hope that it sells. Hopefully the taste sells it too. But if you present it to the customer, that obviously it draws the eye, and the eye buys. The eye buys first.
The presentation has a lot to do with, you know. I mean, how you present something just looks attractive. It's like that, look. See something's not right, you'll come over and you'll move that there sort of thing, or I don't know, I suppose. Yeah. It's like an artist. You think the painting's finished, and he spends 2 or 3 hours. That's not right, and that's not right. So I suppose it's the same idea.
I grabbed a quiet word with former chairwoman Mary Diver, who has a long history with this market.
I started coming with my mum, who would have been one of the... she'd been involved in the market in the beginning, about 35 years ago. In time, I've inherited her number and her and recipes and all things like that as well. Like, she would have made butter in her day, brought it down here, brought buttermilk. She would have had chickens, eggs, brown bread, back to basic essentials that farmers' wives would have had. And it kept her going. It was her income for, you know, probably bought her shoes for school and things like that.
And wasn't that a big part of country markets when it started? The whole idea that women could have an income of their own?
Of course, yeah, because like women, I suppose, in them days weren't seen as the breadwinner. You know, they made the dinners, they looked after the children. Whereas this gave mummy and people like her a purpose. This was a social network for her as well, which was very important for her.
Look at this variety of jam here. This is a new... Dini invents her own varieties here. Gooseberry and orange jam. Where's the samples, Dini? This one.
That's lovely.
It has a unique taste.
It's strange. You think that gooseberry should be on their own, but they're actually very good. But normally I'd do gooseberries and elder flowers as well, but the elder flowers are all gone.
Dini, how long have you been doing the jams here at the country market?
Oh, well, I joined first doing chocolates and fudges and things like that, but then I had to give that up. I wasn't well for a while, but I find making jam is easier. So I suppose it's been maybe 20 years.
In Remelton?
Yes, been a member of the market here 25 years or so. Yeah. So it's grown quite a bit in that time, and it's lovely to see all the new producers coming in, the younger folk with new ideas, and it's great altogether. It's a lovely thing to be part of as a market, and you know, the different personalities.
What does it mean to you in the week? I mean, is it a big part of your week?
Oh, yes. I mean, you wouldn't miss the market for anything.
My name's Harry Greer, and I run the tea room in Remelton Country Markets. If you look around all the other country markets, they don't always have this. And I think this facility, as you can see, people meet up once a week. They have a good gossip, and not just actually for the people meeting, but also financially for the market. It's a very, very important part. Food is social, and good food. And we do good food here.
Antoinette, you are the
controller with the market. I've been in my position now for about 3 years.
Country markets would have been traditionally associated with the apple tarts, with the brown bread,
exactly.
With the jam, which
yes.
are still the staples and
yes.
still sell really
yes.
well.
Yes.
But I also noticed that there was some beautiful Turkish and Russian breads.
Exactly.
Are they new members coming in, bringing in new ideas?
That is our organic producer from Glenties. Thomas has been here longer than I have, probably 15, 18 years probably. But again, it's the adaption of new ideas and new things and trying out something new. And they do work very, very well. The customers will start to queue at about 20 to 11. The regulars will come at about 20 to 11. And some of them will come in and have a look and see what's on the tables. And we have a rope system where the rope is there to keep the people back, because the country market rule here is you don't purchase before 11 o'clock.
My name is Mary Breslin. Great variety of food here. I've been coming here for 30 years now. And it's getting bigger and bigger all the time. And as you can see yourself, lovely arrangement of flowers. You've got meals, you've got fruit, veg, the whole lot. And it's just a great place to come to socialise as well. Have the cup of tea after and the chat, and we all get to know each other.
You're all patiently waiting behind,
yes, yes.
literally, a rope. It's like, you
yes,
know, the
right.
starting orders.
Yes.
How competitive is this?
It's can make very competitive in the summer months, let me tell you. And there's a big, big crowd here. You know, the holidaymakers and all of that. So the bread especially, it's something reasonably new that has come along, and great demand on that. And
the rope goes down and everybody makes a dash.
Don't be on our way.
Well, I'll move out of your way now.
Yeah, that's been like that for a long, long time. And in fact, 2 years ago, we did a survey of our regular customers thinking, maybe we'll get rid of this rope. And said, oh, no, it's all part of the experience coming here. Like, it's, they come in and the basket's forward and elbows out. And then they dive for what they want. And even though this past few years, we've increased the amount of products we have and increased the quantity of what we have per product, they still, this dash, it continues and they seem to love it. And it's just, it's like the Grand National start in the summertime. It's just crazy.
I saw you making a beeline straight for the flowers.
Yes.
You got what you wanted.
I love flowers, yes. I really love the flowers. They've got a great variety here. And they've great gardens here as well. And they know how to grow flowers, obviously. So it's great.
150 number 7. I just shout out the price and the product number.
Sorry.
And Esther puts it through, right? So it's €4 number 46. €4 number 63. €4.50 number 49.
I suppose maybe people like me who know where it started from, and same days when we didn't have the money to pay the rent, when it was, you know, we're really folding at times. But to see it now, it's amazing. You know, and I would love to see Donegal getting to be a place like Cork, where there is it's recognised as being, you know, a food basket of the country, that you've, you know, you've got Remelton Market and Fanny Market, you have the market in Harrison Bridge End, that this is all, you know, that you come to Donegal, there's markets everywhere, and it's all good quality. It was 2 or 3 years ago, we did a photo shot of for Valentine's Day, and we had, like, you could have had it in any five-star hotel. You know, you had your mini tartlets, and there was, at that stage, we had a little do handmade chocolates. Probably the only thing we didn't have was alcohol. We don't have a license to sell that. But then, even that's changing, because you've got the local craft brewers. You know, so you could have everything locally. You could have your dinner on the table locally tonight from local produce. And that's amazing.
The line only went down about 6 minutes ago, and the tables are already clearing out.
Yeah.
Is this every week?
This is every week. Every week. Summer months is worse. Crazy. So, same every week. At least a half an hour, and I'm solid. And it starts to slow down. Mad dash. Next, please.
Well, that's all we've got time for today. I'll be back at the same time next week, so do hope you can join me. Bye-bye.
Our Food is a Hollybrook production for Highland Radio.
funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee.